this chanting of Hare Krishna Mahamantra is called the Yuga Dharma. Dharma means the religious principle of this, means religious principle, and Yuga means this age. The means by which people can actually achieve perfection is through chanting Hare Krishna. When we speak of this word Dharma, it doesn't quite translate into religion. Religion is generally something that's part of material life. Just like everyone has a business, everyone has a certain sexual orientation, although nowadays that can be very vague and undefined or very broad. And similarly, people have a religion as just sort of part of their identity in this world. But Dharma is something different than some type of belief that you have. Dharma is what you are, and actually perfecting what we are. The statement of what you are, Krishna refers to in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Mamayvangsa jiva loka jiva bhuta sanatana. Mamayvangsa. He says that everyone is actually a part of me. When Krishna says that we're a part of him, it means that we're just like him. That doesn't mean that all of us put together become, added up, makes Krishna. Krishna is always the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He always has his own individual, separate, supreme identity, and we always have our own individual, very minute identity. And it's always, it was like that, it is like that, and it will be like that. So this is one of the, again, first statements of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, So everyone assembled here on the battlefield, so in the past, in the present, in the future, will always continue to be. It confirms eternal identity. So when Krishna says that we're part of him, it means we're like God, but in quantity we're different. In quality, we're just like him. And just like quality, when we talk about the quality of God, what is the nature of God's quality? So we know this Satchitananda is sort of a common metaphysical identity that we have for God, just as this microphone stand is made of metal and paint, so it's made of certain ingredients. Similarly, God is also made of certain ingredients. Sat, Chit, Ananda. Ananda means that he's bliss, he's made up of happiness. Not happiness, because we use this word bliss. Ananda. Happiness means sukh. And Krishna differentiates the two. He says, sukha dukhe same kritva. That wherever there's sukh, there's dukh. And wherever there's dukh, there's sukh. So this is the duality that we find in this world. But Ananda is something else. Ananda is something that belongs to the spiritual world where there's no dukh. So that's why it's called Vaikuntha. There's no unhappiness. Everything is made of ananda. Everyone experiences ananda. And everything is eternal. Once again, this microphone stand, it will last for a long time, but sooner or later it will rust, it will corrode, and it will fall away. Same thing may be said of mountains, same thing of this house. Same thing of empires and people and our bodies, and everything is temporary. Ashashvatam. it's called. Ashashvata means very temporary. It's not permanent. It doesn't last for very long. So dukalayam ashashvatam. And everything is chit. God's being is cognizant. And not only is it cognizant, because we're also cognizant, but it's all cognizant. He knows everything. So, Bhavishyani, Chabhutani, Mamtu Vedana, Kaschana, Krishna knows everything. He knows everything past, present, future. He knows what we're thinking right now. He knows what's going on in every part of this world, in every part of the universe, how every atom revolves and moves. He knows everything. We don't know everything. We know some things, and relatively we know little, but we're also cognizant. So Sat-Chit Ananda, that is what he's made of. So Lord Brahma says like this, Sat-Chit Ananda Vigraha, his form, is made of these elements. It's difficult for us to conceive, because we always conceive of things in terms of material things. So we have, I don't know, the periodic element has how many elements now in it? 108, 10. So we always think of things as being made up of hydrogen and oxygen and helium and nitrogen and all of these other different types of things, and we put that together, and it's all matter. But here we're talking about certain elements that are not only about matter, but happiness or bliss, ananda, knowledge or cognizance, and existence. It's a different state of being. And that's called spirit. This is the nature of spirit. And we're also like that. Mamayvamsa. We're also like that. But we're very small. Our ananda is also limited. Krishna's is unlimited. Our cognizance is limited. And our existence, well, we exist just like Krishna. Bhavishyani, Chabhutani, in the past, the present, and future, we always continue to exist like he. So all of these, when you put all of these elements together, what do you have? Jivara Swarupoi, Nityaiva Krishna Das. You have the constitutional nature of everyone. Actually, that wasn't what I wanted to quote. But Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kambhava. What is it? What do all of these things add up to? Knowledge, bliss, and eternal existence. They're experienced and they're aggregate experience comes to what is to be known as love, prema. And that then becomes actually the topmost nature or the raison d'etre, the reason for being of God, is that he wants to, with his eternal spiritual nature, he wants to experience love. And we also want to experience that. It's not really a thing that anyone argues, whether they're atheists or theists or whatever type of theism they believe in. Everyone wants to love. Everyone wants to be loved. But it just doesn't quite work here in this world. And one reason is that we don't know how to love. Somehow or another, everyone just in this world of education, where you have to learn everything, you have to have a PhD, just to be able to brush your teeth. But in order to do the most elevated thing, the thing that people value most, that is just supposed to like happen automatically. You're not even supposed to learn it. It just sort of comes, supposed to come, but it doesn't come. And because it just doesn't come without education, therefore we see that people are getting divorced. They're not staying together. Children are being violent to their parents. Parents are abusing their children in unspeakable ways. And, of course, it's not just going on in the family, but it goes on outside, it goes on in schools, it goes on in the workplace, it goes on in religious institutions. The love formula doesn't work. It's just left to itself. It also is something that needs to be awakened. And so that was that other quote, that, yes, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema, Sridhya Kavadoya. This Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte, how do you learn about it? Like you learn about anything. You hear everything that we've learned. We hear about things. So to actually learn how to love, we need to hear. And who are the persons who really know the science of loving? Those who know actually what is the center point. Because love means an exchange. It means relationship. So relationship means that there are two aspects of a relationship. It's a little technical, but one is called Ashraya and one is called Vishaya. Vishaya means the object. And Ashraya means the lover, and Vishaya means the beloved. So in any relationship, it's like that. For a parent, a little child is the beloved, and the parent is the abode, he's the lover, or she is the lover, in a certain mood, in a parental mood. So in this world, we have a sort of very secular concept of love, and that secular concept of love is that God has no place in it, and therefore it implodes, because that's not the science of love. It's like saying that I don't believe in atoms, and therefore atoms don't configure in my concept of matter. But you can't take atoms out of your concept of matter, otherwise you have no concept of matter, because matter is dependent upon atoms. So that's a fact. So similarly, how does love work? Love works when God is in the center, when He is the Vishaya. So when Krishna says Mama Evangsa, or He says Nitya Krishna Das, He's identifying what our identity is in a role of love. And that is that we are lovers, and He is the beloved. And He's the one, and we are the many. Now that brings up a problem. When, you know, we live in a democratic world and we think, well, why should he be the one who's in the focus? Why can't there be many who are in the middle? Or why can't I be in the middle? Therefore, very often we want to set up those type of relationships that, number one, excludes God, and number two, that actually places us in a position where we become the exclusive object of loving relationships. And then it doesn't work. So we divorce, we abort, we eat the cow, our mother, we perform all of these activities all in a realm where everyone's still running around looking to love and to be loved. But it doesn't work. So why doesn't it work? Because we've taken the main element out of the relationship. So, chanting Hare Krishna and Krishna consciousness is meant to actually revive and awaken this loving relationship with Krishna, and is meant to actually purify our hearts so that we can actually clearly establish what our role is and also what Krishna's role is in that relationship. It's something meant to be learned, practiced, and invoked. Yes, this prema, this love, this is present within everyone's heart. But somehow or another, it needs to actually be reawakened, it needs to be brought out. So for this reason, this Yuga Dharma, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, 500 years ago, introduced this Dharma of chanting Hare Krishna. He introduced it so that we can actually free our hearts from all of the other things that cover our natural propensity to love Krishna, and in that way actually to learn to love each other. You open the newspaper, you turn on the radio, you turn on the TV, what happens? Someone blew these people up. Israel just invaded Palestine, well, we did 3 weeks ago. And it's just one after another. It's like a horror show. You don't have to go to horror movies anymore. It's just the news, is it? It's much more violent than anything that you can see in any movie or any TV program. So why is this the end result of the world around us? And you can't deny it, it's going on. And it's increasing more and more. The other day I was reading how, I think it was in Leeds, that now they have full-time in a good part of the education in the school system. They have full-time police guards for the teachers. This was something that was going on in certain parts of America, New York and Chicago. Now it's spread to the UK as well. In other words, you're giving someone something, you're giving them knowledge, and your life's in danger. In other words, that's how much people value receiving something. The basis of this type of interaction, relationship, is so without any real substance. And it's more and more like that. And why is that there? Because unfortunately, this yuga, this age that we live in, it's an age of misunderstanding, it's an age of violence, it's an age of quarrel, it's an age of bad habits, and all of these things obstruct the natural flow of affection amongst people. And they may be singing about it, and you've probably noticed for as long as you lived that 95% of the songs are about love. But how come, despite the fact that everyone's singing about it, it's not working? Because it's just not enough to sing about it. It's not going to happen just by that. You need to know how to actually awaken it. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually gave us this key. Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself, and he came 500 years ago, and he gave us this Maha Mantra as the means of cleansing our heart from all of these unwanted things that cover it. It's a very easy phrase, clean your heart. But how do you clean your heart? You have experience of cleaning your shoes, cleaning the carpet, bathing yourself. These are easy things, and you can get ingredients that's easy to clean. But how do you clean your heart? Obviously, you're not going to try sticking something down your throat and cleaning it like that. You'll die, you kill yourself. So when we talk about the heart, we're not just talking about actually the organ itself, but we're talking about the soul or our essential nature, and how all of these bad habits like lust and greed and anger and envy, how do you clean envy? You can buy some kind of super cleaner and you can clean some grease spot off of your carpet. But what kind of cleaner are you going to get for getting rid of envy? And it's not enough just to change your behavior, because your change of behavior is simply an external imposition. You may not be behaving in an envious way, but that doesn't mean that you yourself have become freed from that propensity to think like that or act like that. So this requires some kind of really subtle cleaning agent. And that subtle cleaning agent is God in a very unique form. And that unique form is in the form of his name. When God assumes the form of sound or sound vibration, then we know sound vibration is a very subtle thing. It reaches to where other things don't go. When we're sleeping at night and someone just calls our name, that sound enters into our ear and it wakes us up, wake up. We immediately wake up. The sound is the most subtle form of matter, or it's the subtle form of communication, better said. And sound can actually penetrate and enter, and sound can contaminate, and sound can purify. Why is it that 8-year-old children are killing each other? That's also going on. Because that's what they're hearing and that's what they're seeing. They're watching Bugs Bunny or the Roadrunner, you know, the Roadrunner is running down the road and behind them comes the fox and then, or the, what's it called, the coyote. The coyote. Comes the coyote And then the roadrunner throws a 2-ton weight on top of the coyote and it turns into pancake. And then the next scene, the coyote is running again. So this is communication. It's called sound, although it's visual in effect, but you're communicating something, you're giving some sound. So obviously children think you drop a car on someone's head, the next thing they'll just get up and walk again, because that's the sound that they hear. Whatever type of music they hear, that's the type of music they sing. Information that they get, it forms your consciousness. So it may deform your consciousness, or it may actually purify consciousness. When we live in a world where violence is the norm, violence is entertainment, then it's no wonder that people tend to be violent and become extremely aggressive, almost for no reason whatsoever. So this is the power of sound, the power of communication, that it has an effect, a very, very subtle effect in molding who we are. And once we're molded like that, then it's very difficult to change. But the same thing that has molded us in one way, that same thing also can change the mold. You can change the dot. You can purify the heart. And transcendental sound can once again actually purify our hearts and free us from many of these other impure things. Lust. It's everywhere. That's what, toothbrushes. That's what you sell toothbrushes with, cars with, everything. So we see that our whole world is actually based on that. What is our consumer society based on? People must be greedy. If they're not greedy, then how can you get them to take out loans for money that they don't have to spend things that they don't need? Only if you make them greedy. And how do you make them greedy? You use lust to make people greedy. So we see that the world around us, what we call advertisement, is to use these enticements to get people to sell their lives for things that have very little relevance to the fact of whether they're living or dying. That your eating has great relevance to living or dying. But whether you have a television in every room, or a 5-car garage, or whether you have a mobile telephone and so on, it facilitates some things, but life doesn't particularly depend on it. And of course we know that this is just, it's not an issue of bare necessities of these commodities, which may be of value, but it's a matter of a new one every 6 months, a new computer every new year, new gadgets increasing the desire with more and more features. This is features, you have all kinds of different features. So it's not enough that you've got Ethernet and AirNet and Wi-Fi and Hi-Fi. And so many features, your body doesn't have that many features. There's so many functions. But still, more and more and more. And sound is used to increase these things. This sound, this transcendental sound, frees you from these things. And as we become free from all of these artificial things that have molded us into something that, in the words that we use in India, untouchables, is that more or less people in the world have become untouchables. You can't touch them. Because, well, why is that word untouchable? Because just by touching them, you become contaminated. People in Vedic culture, those people who eat meat are untouchables, because you touch them, they're impure. Their existence is impure because the food they eat is so impure. So you touch them, you become impure. But now everyone lives like that. Everyone eats like that. The doctors are trying to convince us, you be a vegetarian and you're going to be unhealthy and sick. Not all doctors, but those doctors who have real strong prejudice, those who are actually objective, they'll know that actually it's a much healthier lifestyle. So to free ourselves from all of these very subtle characteristics, we need pure sound. And there's nothing as pure as God. So God, in the form of transcendental sound vibration, purifies our hearts, frees us from all of these very degrading influences and allows us once again to be ourselves. And when you're yourself, which is Nitya Krishna Das, that you're actually eternal servant of Krishna, then you can reestablish reawaken your long-lost relationship with Krishna, that relationship, which is really based on loving. And then, the example that we often hear or read about, if you know how to love Krishna, then you'll know how to love everyone automatically. Because it's like pouring water on the root of a tree. So when you pour water on the root of a tree, then all the leaves and the branches and the flowers and the twigs and everything becomes nurtured. And this is actually the science of loving. But when you want to go directly, one leaf to another, you're just going to both dry up. And that's what's happening in this world. We're drying up. Because we've cut Krishna out of the picture, we've cut him out of the family, we've cut him out of the school, we've cut him out of politics, we've cut him out of everything. They even cut him out of church or temple. We don't, that God we don't want. The God who you have to surrender to, that kind of God we don't want. We want the kind of God who fulfills our desires and gives us what we want. That's okay. But the one who says, Sarva Dharma Pritya Jamami Kam Sharanam Bhajadas, he's not so popular. And that's why in this age, for instance, demigod worship has become so much more prominent. Because people have this misconception that that's the function of demigods, to just give material blessings. But it's not, actually. They're also Vaishnavas. And they have better things to do than just be running around and supplying people with all the things that they want. They're also servants with their allotted service. So chant Hare Krishna. That's the message that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has brought us. That's the message that Srila Prabhupada gave in the Krishna Consciousness Movement. It's a very simple message, but you can see it's very sublime. It actually gets to the root of the problem, so much so that, well, now there's not an oil shortage, but 6 months back, the price of oil was going sky high. There was something similar in 75. And at that time, one newspaper reporter asked Prabhupada, Swamiji, what's your solution for the oil crisis? Prabhupada said, chant Hare Krishna. And the man said, don't you think that's a simplistic answer? And Prabhupada said, no. Because for Prabhupada, it wasn't a simplistic answer. Because if you chant Hare Krishna, then the original problems that caused that oil crisis, which is not a matter of just mismanagement or bad management or not enough oil wells or too much drilling or not enough, but it's actually who people are. It will solve not only the oil crisis, but it'll solve all kinds of crises. And it's a very pragmatic, it's not a simplistic answer. It is the answer. Provided that we want answers that get to the root of the problems, and we don't want superficial answers, just like we have another crisis. Right now we have an economic crisis. So there are different solutions being posed, and generally they're based upon the same thing that got us into the problem. Spend, spend, spend. Just somehow or another try to convince the consumer to keep consuming. It's like trying to get someone to eat 24 hours a day, and then when he wants a break, you tell him, oh, you've got to keep eating more, because it keeps our kitchen going. So, but actually, is that really the solution to the credit crisis? Or maybe is the credit crisis, like other crises in the world, a natural consequence of the laws of nature, that people are living a sinful life? I don't want to repeat myself, but there's major issues like abortions and wars and just the phenomenal types of or the quantity of innocent animals that are being slaughtered on this planet in very remote locations we call slaughterhouses. Most people don't see, don't want to hear of, but it's still happening. Somehow or another, someone's got to pay for all of that. All of that sinful reaction has to compound and has to come down at some point. You can't get away from having an economic crisis. You'll be lucky if that's the only crisis that you have. Because if you go back in history, there's always been crises. We've just had it pretty good for the last 60 years, which is more or less all of our lifespans fit into that. So we haven't had any experience of something else. But our parents experienced the Second World War, and our grandparents the First World War, and there have been so many other wars and famines and droughts and you name it, all kinds of things have been going on this planet regularly, systematically, particularly as our age has become more and more modern and atheistic and people have become addicted to sinful activities. You can't avoid crises. And if it's just economic, and if it isn't the global warming on top of that, or some, who knows, rogue state sets off an atom bomb somewhere, it has to be, because somehow or another, all of these sinful activities compound, and at a certain point, Krishna, or more exactly material nature, says, all right, now you have to pay. Between First and Second World War, almost 120 million people died. That's a lot of people. That's twice the population of this country, just like wiped it out twice. That's a lot of people died. For what? What happened? What was achieved? And it's almost useless. And I remember that I'm in touch with my mother regularly, and she was sent, she lived in the Hungarians. She was in Auschwitz. She was sent in Auschwitz. She was one of the few who survived being in Auschwitz. But she always says, yes, at the end of the Second World War, the whole mood was that now people have learned their lessons and there will be no more war. But she says, all that's happened since the Second World War is more wars. Whether it's the Vietnam War or the Korean War or you name it, there's so many wars, it's just hard to keep track. It just hasn't been on such a global scale, but it's been going on. So she's sort of lost the taste for life as a consequence of that. She said, it's hopeless. Men can't be reformed. And it's a fact. You can't change men simply by material formulas, unless we take this formula that Prabhupada said, yes, very pragmatic, chant Hare Krishna. Unless you clean your heart, unless you people are willing to change who they are, they can't avoid these things. It must happen. So wishful thinking will not make it go away, hasn't changed it in the past. The hope is that because people are educated in the modern day and age, because communication is so good, because I can talk here and someone in China can be listening to it at the same time, that we can use all of this good intelligence and faculties for actually trying to bring about some kind of evolution in people's lives. But at least if we're not changing the world, our duty is, how are we changing ourselves? And we can certainly change ourselves, because that's something that we do have control over. We may not have control over others. So this is the Yuga Dharma, chanting Hare Krishna. And we invite everyone, request everyone to practice it as we were chanting earlier with instruments. That's one type of chanting, bhajan. Otherwise, chanting on beads. But chant, chant, chant. And it will actually free us from all of these influences that are going around us, help us to become better beings, and ultimately allow us to achieve what the goal of life is. That is that we can actually become lovers of Krishna, and which qualifies us to actually go back to the spiritual world, where there is Krishna says, parastas mattabhavaniyo vyakta vyakta sanatana. So another place, which is Paramdham, where all of these things that we experience here, we talk about, and it gets tiring talking about it, gets tired hearing about it, gets tired living it. There's no such problem over there. Here it will always be like this, greater or lesser degree. There's no such problem. Hare Krishna. Maybe we can chant a little more. And then what's after that? Prasadam. And then there's prasadam.
Can you just request that there's only a few people waiting outside and we can stop coming a little bit?
Excuse me a little bit. Mm.
Sorry.
Are you going? Let's hear your experience.